into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now you're welcome back. So very interesting Carabao Cup semi-final this evening. Let's get team news once again. Peter Smith is with us.
Only two changes for each team. Dean Henderson makes his Old Trafford debut in goal for United. Victor Lindelof is restored, with David De Gea and Eric Bailly dropping down to the bench. City's two alterations see recalls for Riyad Mahrez and Fernandinho, with Rodri and Bernardo Silva joining the available again Jesus and Walker amongst the City substitutes. At Old Trafford, it's Manchester United against Manchester City.
Yeah, kicks off at 7:45. Miguel Delaney of the London Independent is with us. Happy New Year, Miguel. How you doing?
Happy New Year. Not too bad. Fairly excited about this one.
Yeah, this should be good. Just to pause for a moment, the news from Derby broke this evening. Effectively, they're withdrawing from their FA Cup third round. They'll be sending a team of under-23/under-18s against Chorley. And the news has come through as well. 40 players and club staff have tested positive for coronavirus over the past week in the Premier League. I was looking at some of the figures. They did hit 10 positives, certainly, in September. They hit 14 in November as well, but if you take the last 4 weeks of tests, it was six across 1 week, middle of December, followed by seven the next week. They then broke the record with 18 positives last week, and now the news has emerged today. They've hit 40 today. How worrying is this? Are we a couple more weeks of this away from words like exponential being used and this thing teetering and being under pressure, or are the Premier League happy enough with the situation under the circumstances?
I've had to write a lot about this and chase, but I suppose it's my livelihood that it's connected to, not just the footballers. But this situation, like this whole league season, can make fools of any predictions. But for the moment, I actually don't think the figures are that concerning at all. In fact, I have to say, from some of the stories that started last week, when we almost had that kind of cascade of news about Fulham, about Manchester City, it looked like it could go out of control. But I actually think the numbers of just 40 positive cases are quite low relative to the concern and relative to the possible situation. Because I think there were fears that there could be huge numbers. And I think that stands at about almost 2% of the tests. Mm. And from everyone you speak to in the Premier League, they're quite comfortable with those numbers. They feel they show that the system is adaptable. And I mean, and yeah, you're right that these numbers do show a spike from what we've become used to since Project Restart got underway. But then the whole point of this was going to happen at some point, and the system has to show it's adaptable. And I think they do, because and there are kind of wider issues here, because ultimately we've come out of we're coming out of the Christmas season when a lot of and we've seen some of the cases with, say, Tottenham Hotspur or Lanzini, where some players have naturally been gathering with family. That's less likely from here on in. And so I think there maybe was an expectation this was going to happen at some point. So it's just about the system adapting. And the Premier League are fully confident that the system can adapt. Because ultimately, the players or staff, they don't get COVID from playing football or from training or from even kind of travelling together. That's pretty much all the scientific evidence backs it up now. And that's why the Premier League is so confident. It's where they've got COVID is kind of, I suppose, coming out of the bubble, so to speak, or, you know, mixing. And the feeling is that given the messages they've had from Public Health England, basically to adhere as strictly as possible to the rules, that we might see this level out. Mm. And there is a confidence it won't reach these kind of crisis numbers in football. But the one thing I would say, I do think this could be an FA Cup weekend that will raise alarms, because, I mean, like, I've had to write about this for the weekend as well. I mean, the FA Cup is, you know, the competition, the third round is the weekend that brings all of English football together, all the rest of it. But what it will show this weekend is a huge split in terms of the haves and have-nots in terms of testing. Because ultimately, and it is remarkable, this is true, but up until this week, the Premier League was basically the only competition in England that was, or only men's competition, that was regularly testing in that way. In the lower leagues in the EFL, there was almost this kind of approach where if players felt something, then they'd get tests. But there wasn't the same scheduled testing as in the top division.
Okay, so there is a round of tests before the third round, I presume, then?
Yeah, so and the FA are paying for that. The game board are paying, so all the 64 teams involved will be tested. And you'd have to think, I mean, given this is a series of games with clubs who have had regular testing and involving matches with a lot of clubs that haven't had regular testing, we could well see a jump in positive cases for those that haven't been regularly testing.
Mm. So this evening's game then, Man City against Manchester United at Old Trafford, you sort of forget City have won this tournament five times in the last seven. I mean, it's kind of a disposable tournament in people's memories, and you know they've won it of late, but five of the last seven is quite extraordinary. They're an interesting case just now after what we saw at Stamford Bridge, and I was asking the lads even in the newsroom before you came on, are we going to look back at Stamford Bridge as the moment when City got their act together and kicked on in a big way? Or will it just be something of a high point in an otherwise inconsistent season? I'm not sure of the answer.
No, and that's been the nature of this season, hasn't it? And I mean, you say about a statement performance, but then I thought exactly the same after Liverpool beat Spurs and then won 7-0 at Crystal Palace. I remember immediately after that game thinking, that's it, that's a title. Liverpool are going to go on a run now. So, I mean, it has been the kind of season where you'd be cautious about any prediction. And also, there is a context to City in that, obviously, their Monday game had been called off, so they had the extra few days break before playing Chelsea. That might be a factor. But even that's kind of instructive, I think, because I've had to do a bit on City this season. When you talk to people around the club, ultimately, there's been a few little issues or elements that have kind of been discussed that have maybe explained this. What has been a flatter season so far, certainly in comparison to even Guardiola's first season, the football at the start was much better than what we've seen this year up until that game against Chelsea. And there's a few things at play. Obviously, hanging over a lot of this is that it's Guardiola's fifth season and the first time in his career he's ever spent this long as a club. So that's almost an interesting dynamic in itself, that we've never seen him this long. And as you can see from the sideline or how he speaks, Guardiola's an intense individual. And you would wonder how long any group of players can kind of stay as sharp with that, or they naturally get fatigued by it. And a few people were talking about that at the start of the season when City were putting in flatter performances, that, you know, some of these players they could do with a mental break almost. But then on the other side, and this is naturally going to come from people closer to Guardiola and kind of some of the Catalan delegation you talked to around the club, that City actually had a specific physical conditioning approach, which is almost to kind of not rein themselves in, but it was basically training wasn't a full pelt, or physical training wasn't a full pelt, because of the nature of this season. They knew how congested it was. And because of that, they probably weren't operating at maximum physical capacity for a lot of the early months. And the plan is, again, this is what people around the club say, or people close to some of the players, the plan is that they'll be as sharp as possible then coming into when it matters most. And maybe that's what we saw on Saturday. On Sunday. Maybe it's this team now kind of finding the benefit of a more constrained physical approach given this season. And we might well see the fruits of it over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because the league is there to be won this year. You know, I mean, as you said, it really did look as if Liverpool a couple of weeks ago, right before this massive slump, were about to find their groove and canter away from the rest. And equally, Manchester United are winning, but they haven't been spellbinding. I mean, deflected last-minute goals and, you know, squeaking by Villa. And these are really, you know, confidence, improving results, and there's a sense of camaraderie about the whole thing, but they haven't been spellbinding. And so, like, there is a gap in the market for a Man City to find their groove and really make hay while the others are still figuring things out. Like, unless Liverpool buy a centre-half, for instance, you know, there's no obvious end to this, some of their issues.
Yeah, it feels like we're basically waiting for one good team to go on a proper Alex Ferguson-style run where someone just puts the hammer down and goes, that's it. And in that sense, the season has reminded me so far, and he actually, this also correlates with kind of the figures we see in terms of point returns and defeats and wins. It's like a season out of the 1990s. Like, it reminds me kind of 96, 97, or even a championship campaign where every, like, it feels like within the space of three games, and we've seen this with Liverpool, we've seen this with Arsenal, we've seen this with City, we've seen this with Chelsea, but in the space of three games, a team's entire complexion can change. And even along those lines, I was looking at this just before Christmas, or just after Christmas, sorry, where so far this season, the longest winning run is a mere four games. No one has gone to run longer than that. Everton have done it twice. They had a chance to go five in a row in their last game, and almost predictably with this Everton side, lost. But that all feeds into it. I think it's just, and why it's like one of those 90s campaigns where you get into kind of the January, February period, and that's when whoever's going to win the title, which in the 90s was invariably a Ferguson United, starts to kind of get serious about it. And it does feel like we're waiting for that.
Yeah. God, there's something quaint and reassuring there about the notion that the title doesn't really start till Christmas and you just have to hang around.
Well, but even that's a bit of a, like, because what we've become accustomed to basically since, I suppose really since Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And he caught Ferguson on the hop. Ferguson realised, oh my God, I have to start like the clappers now since this guy's in town.
Yeah, that was exactly, because the Ferguson method was always make sure we're ready for January, February, and that's when we show we're champions. Mm. Whereas Mourinho came in and suddenly, you know, Chelsea were winning like six or seven in a row from the very start of the season. The pace was set, and it just completely changed the nature of English football. And this is it feels like this is the first time in a long time, maybe since then, that it's been that bit more open. And we're going to go back to maybe the days where, you know, the back nine of the season, if you like, are when reality asserts itself.
Yes, there's some analogy about the Masters not starting until the back nine on Sunday that we can work in here. So of Manchester United then, City explode to life on Sunday, and we have to see how sustained that's going to be. United have sort of been creeping towards this. I mean, geez, it's not long ago since Solskjaer was under really serious pressure. They haven't been spellbinding, as I said. You know, that goal against Wolves doesn't go in. There's a different complexion on them. The Villa game, you know, Villa were good in that game. Could have gone a different way. But they're getting over the line, and you can see it even in their body language. Getting over the line is increasing their confidence, is building a sense of rapport, even some of the on-field celebrations at full time. They're also looking like they have a few more ideas about themselves when a team is camped and parking the bus. They look a little more likely to open them up, which they didn't for a while. They felt like just a counter-attacking team for far too much of this season.
Yeah, I think when you pull back a little bit there as well, it's to Solskjaer's credit, really. I mean, they've had two disasters this season. They had the 6-1 defeat to Spurs, which looked like it really could be close to the end for them. And then they had the elimination against Leipzig after having started that Champions League group so well. And of course, the Champions League group, the wins in that game came after the 6-1 defeat to Spurs. But to Solskjaer's credit, every time, in a way that maybe you wouldn't have seen under other managers, they have rallied around him, they've played for him, and they've looked quite good.
Mm. There's a hesitancy when you say that.
Well, the one thing I would say about United, I think there's definitely a spirit there, and I think it's to Solskjaer's credit that he's kind of engendered this. But there isn't too many games where they're completely convincing. I mean, even all those games you referenced, not just Wolves and Villa, but also going back to the Southampton game, the West Ham game, as part of this unbeaten run. So many of them are kind of almost knife-edge games. And when United are good in individual parts, or even in individual periods of games, they can still go either way, in a way that it does feel like it has a kind of a lingering element of doubt about them. But in saying that, you can also see, as you say there, the confidence in the squad is evidently growing with this. The comfort with each other is growing. And even Solskjaer himself looks like he's getting more confident. I mean, it feels like he kind of backs himself with decisions more. Like, even against Villa the other night, when he took off Bruno for James to basically kind of just shore up that side of the pitch. And so a lot of that is kind of coming off for him now. The team, they do look like they're in a bit of a flow, and they go forward, and there's a connection with each other. When you do talk to people around United, and I think this is still true for some of their senior players, they do have some, not doubts, but they would compare Solskjaer unfavorably to maybe some top coaches in terms of kind of the way United train and, you know, his attacking ideas. And maybe when they have another kind of drop off, that will come again, that's when these sort of problems expose themselves. Because, you know, it's always the case with these sort of teams. When you have brilliant attackers like United do, they're all on form and in confidence. They tend to look pretty good. It's when there's a roadblock that you see a few issues.
Yeah, I've heard some of these mumblings about training being a bit basic in the eyes of some players of late. I mean, it's always hard to know who's saying that and what their agenda is and how true it is. I mean, Solskjaer with his notebook every day under Sir Alex, is he still just, you know, whipping out the old notebook and doing the same training? I doubt it. It's hard to know where the truth lies in that claim.
Yeah, well, and the other side of that is it could actually serve them this season as well, because, I mean, obviously, as we've been talking about there, it's been a more unpredictable season than ever. And I think there are a few factors to that. You know, obviously the calendar, the effect of fatigue, the transfer market, meaning clubs can overhaul. But also, there isn't enough time to train. And a feature of the last few years, and arguably one of the most dominant features in football, has been these super coaches like Klopp, Guardiola, basically drilling their teams to these supreme degrees and basically using their time to coach teams and have them prepared in a way that was really has never been seen for most of football's history. Mm. Like, football has taken a real evolution in that regard in the last decade in terms of how well prepared it is and how tactical it's become. And maybe in a season like this, where there is less time to train, I mean, I don't write off Solskjaer as a vibes manager in that regard, but maybe his approach might actually suit the rigors of this season a little bit better.
Mm. Very last one, because the game has started. I'm sure you're very keen to watch it. On Liverpool and their centre-half situation, so Fabinho with Henderson, Phillips, Matip, Reece Williams, they're, I mean, chopping and changing in a way that is just not good for the team. Is Klopp going to the board and saying, if you buy me a centre-half, I'll pretty much guarantee you the league? Where is their head at, do we know?
He does want one, but at the moment, all the talk is that they may not move and they might persist with basically trying to adapt to this situation. Because I suppose, I mean, Liverpool are, they're quite a far-sighted club in this way. And it's one of the issues that they could buy a centre-half now, and then they might have problems in the future because they don't really need one once they have a full complement. Mm. But then again, I mean, we've seen this previously. We saw this in the summer where the murmurs were they weren't going to sign anyone and it might be a barren summer. And then they went and signed Jota and Thiago.
Yeah.
So we might well see the same again, especially if they have a few more setbacks.
OK, listen, of the London Independent, Miguel Delaney. Enjoy the game, Miguel. Thanks, Emil.
Cheers, Jock. See you later.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Still Manchester United 0, Manchester City 1. 70 minutes on the clock. Fred has just been booked for a tackle. So 20 minutes to go for United to nick an equaliser and keep themselves in the tournament. We'll hear from Kevin Doyle at full time. He's watching this game. First, though, earlier on this afternoon, before the madness had all kicked off, I spoke to the always brilliant Philippe Auclair because we were interested to see what he made of Pochettino taking over at PSG.
Now, we're very happy to say that Philippe Auclair is with us. Philippe, hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
Interesting times at PSG. So Mauricio Pochettino and his staff appointed on Saturday up until 2022 with the option of a third year. He obviously played for the club previously back in 2001-03. Before Pochettino and all that, can we have a glance back at the Thomas Tuchel era? As things stand, PSG are third in Ligue 1 after 17 games, which is kind of interesting. But they are only a point behind Lyon. And Lille, who are joint top, they're through to the Champions League knockout stages, as Manchester United fans will know well. Last year, Champions League final and their seventh Ligue 1 in 8 years. So does Tuchel depart with his reputation enhanced or diminished? Is he hot property now in European football?
I'll say neither. And the reason is that the results have been, you know, what you would expect. He was the first PSG manager to take the club to a Champions League final, so which is a great achievement, even if it was an achievement that was reached in pretty peculiar circumstances. We'll remember the game against Atalanta, for example, and the kind of lucky draw that PSG had in the final late, but they made the most of it. So in this context, he did very well. In other contexts, he was not exactly as successful as I think he himself and the hierarchy at PSG would have liked him to be. They haven't quite gone past this glass ceiling that they seem to bump their head against ever since, actually, Carlo Ancelotti was the manager of the club. And despite huge investment, they succeeded domestically, but to be honest, this is par for the course. This is just like for them to win the title and even to do a treble is nothing exceptional. It's almost like avoiding relegation for a mid-table club and in the Premier League. So his legacy, if there is such a word, is very difficult to evaluate at this moment, because you don't feel that there is a legacy as such, that you don't feel that what he has done as PSG is going to have a lasting impact on what the club is going to do over the next couple of seasons. And actually, the very illustration of that is the fact they've taken on a manager who is a legacy manager, i.e. Mauricio Pochettino, a man who's never won anything, but a man who is capable not only to give them success in the short term, which is what they want, but also to build the foundations of the PSG that Nasser Al-Khelaifi and his bosses dream of. Mm.
Thomas Tuchel's position never felt that secure. I mean, even take something he said in October. He was very unhappy that PSG lost Cavani to Manchester United and Thiago went to Chelsea as well. And he was saying, we lose too many players on free transfers. Yep. And Leonardo, sporting director, came out and said, Tuchel needs to understand how delicate the current situation is. We've seen a drop of more than 100 million euros in our income. We've got financial fair play. The club and I really aren't pleased about his comments about the lack of signings. If someone isn't happy, they should leave. I'll speak to him in private about this. Now, I'm no fortune teller, Philippe, but at that stage, if I was Pochettino, my ears were peaking. The only way Tuchel could have survived was to make himself virtually unsackable at all times. And PSG's domestic form was very, very average. 14 points from a possible 24. What's this about?
It's about mostly an impossible season to manage to start with. It's the result of, obviously their season ended much, much later than anybody else in the French league. He's had to rely on a squad which was never complete, never full. You had all the COVID cases with very strange behavior from some top players like Neymar, for example. You might remember that. There were a number of injuries. He's never been able to put together the team that he really wanted. And to be honest, I don't think he had the team he wanted either. And when Leonardo is alluding to the differences of appreciation between himself and his then manager, a lot of it relates to the politics of recruitment. Tuchel really felt that the club was not recruiting properly. I have to say that the financial fair play angle is a complete red herring, because we all know that UEFA has actually more or less suspended de facto FPF because of the pandemic. So, and PSG has got a few millions in the bank to deal with. But it was really one of the many things on which the two men were at loggerheads. And it held on until the final of the Champions League. According to everything I've heard from actually inside the camp, the atmosphere within PSG, the dressing room, was really good up until that final against Bayern Munich. They had found a kind of togetherness that perhaps had been elusive beforehand in the run-up to the final, but then afterwards everything went wrong. And the results on the pitch were very disappointing. They were not exactly unexpected. And to be honest, many people thought this was just a period of adaptation for this PSG, who's played far longer than the others, hasn't had the full squad, and also these internal struggles that had to be resolved one way or another. So is Tuchel responsible for that? Certainly not entirely.
Because he said even just last month that he felt more like a sports politician or sports minister than a football coach. I mean, like this thing was just brewing. His sacking was brewing, clearly, when he was saying these kind of things. Oh. I saw as well Thomas Meunier, who left in the summer. He says he remembers his 4 years at PSG as nothing but birthday parties, which is just one of the great quotes, I think. And I see CNN Brazil are saying Neymar has been having some kind of festive bash underground, which he's denying. So, you know, these are all the things that Pochettino now is suddenly going to face.
Yes, it's going to be interesting. There have been quite a few reports about this massive bash. Some people said 500 people were invited. Not in Neymar's house, but in another place close to his home in Brazil. He's not come back in a fit state because, for example, he won't be in the squad which is going to play against Saint-Etienne this evening, you know, in the resumption of the French league. There are a number of problems that Pochettino will have to face very, very quickly. There is indiscipline within this camp, and it has been the case for a very long time. A problem, recurring problem, that all managers since Antoine Comboiré and Carlo Ancelotti, Laurent Blanc, Unai Emery had to face was the fact that they never quite felt that the PSG hierarchy, i.e. Nasser Al-Khelaifi, was fully on their side when they were having problems, especially disciplinary problems with some players. And it's well known as well that PSG is a little bit like the old FC Hollywood that Bayern Munich used to be at one point. Some players don't necessarily have the kind of hygiene in terms of a lifestyle, I mean, of course, that you would expect from top footballers. And it's been very difficult for managers so far to be able to be able to impose their will and their discipline on that group of players. They have tried to address that by moving some players away. They have tried to address that by having managers who had a reputation for being quite strict disciplinarians, which is certainly true of Tuchel and is even truer of Mauricio Pochettino. So you would say that, yes, the next few weeks are going to be very interesting in terms of team selection and in terms of what happens exactly in the relationship between the player and their new manager. And believe me, PSG being the leakiest club in Liga, we will know about this fairly soon.
Yeah, it just seems like such a mess to try and clean up. Yeah. And it's not that the dice are rigged necessarily, but it's complicated by the fact that you, seemingly any manager who goes in there, you in Pochettino's case, you are not as powerful as Neymar, for instance. One of the main protagonists when it comes to a lack of hygiene. I like that phrase of yours, by the way. So Neymar's off doing his thing. And the president enjoys chatting to Neymar, and it's nice, there's egos and it's nice, and me and Neymar are on our level and we're good friends, and Neymar's doing his thing. Yeah. And meanwhile, you're Pochettino coming into this mess where previously, the alpha males in your dressing room were Harry Kane and Son, both absolute models of professionalism and humility. So yes. How does any manager clean up PSG when effectively that manager is not all that powerful?
I guess you've just given one of the reasons why Pochettino's contract is only 18 months long. Why would a club which has just netted one of the most sought-after managers in the world game would only give him 18 months? No way. That's not going to happen. So my guess would be that Mauricio Pochettino would like to taste the water for a while. Before fully engaging with PSG, because he might have some ideas at the back of his mind. What can I say? I think you're absolutely right. I think the coziness of the relationships that Al-Khelaifi and some other people at the club have had with some of the star players has been really a problem. It's also, I don't think it's not betraying a secret when saying that when things don't go right, it becomes quite difficult for the managers to have a direct link to their owner and to their chairman, i.e. Nasser Al-Khelaifi, and beyond that, the Emir of Qatar. And there tends to be, the players rule, basically. And this is where, when the appointment of Mauricio Pochettino, you could see it in two ways. You could see it, first of all, it's really quite fashionable and impressive appointment, but it might also be a statement of intent, because we all know how Mauricio Pochettino worked at Espanyol, at Southampton, and at Tottenham. And we know that he's somebody who has very high demands in terms of discipline and the way the players behave on and off the pitch. So maybe they brought him precisely for that reason, because they understand that some of their star players do need... I mean, and Neymar is not the only one. Would you think of somebody like Verratti, for example, who is clearly one of the great talents of his generation in midfield, has never been able to fulfill this potential precisely because of a lifestyle that is perhaps not exactly ideal for a top footballer, and a number of injuries, which perhaps were also caused by the fact that he doesn't look after himself as he should. So you bring in Mauricio Pochettino and you hope he's going to bring in the same kind of discipline he brought in his previous clubs. But that goes, obviously, with a risk, which is the antagonization of some key players within that PSG team, players who've been there for a while, players who've seen managers come and go, and whom at the end of Tuchel's reign really couldn't care less about what was going to happen to their manager or not, whatever the messages of social networks might have been.
Mm. So maybe in some respects for Pochettino is the shot to nothing. This elevates him to the level of super club manager, which is a nice merry-go-round to mm-hmm. get on board. And if things go very badly awry, his stock is high enough for him to explain this away as, well, look, it's a basket case. Nobody can sort out that mess over there. And so he probably walks into a pretty big job in 18 months if things go badly awry from the off.
Yes, indeed. And if he walks off at some point, be it in 18 months or earlier, it will be with probably a French League champion title to his honours list, which is empty for the time being. And he might have another treble. There's no reason. PSG are so far ahead of everybody else that, believe me, the situation will right itself. Well, pandemic permitting, of course. And you will see PSG dominating the game in France as it has done for a number of years. In Europe, it's a different thing. They've done, in a way, the most important thing. They've qualified, which is another thing which wasn't held in Tuchel's favour. And which, by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but one of his assistants, called Schulte Löw, who is Hungarian, so apologies if I've completely... made a mess of his name, but had talked to one of his country's papers just after the weekend, I believe, and actually starting to spill the beans a little bit and explaining that the decision was absolutely incomprehensible and insisting on the fact that the problems with Leonardo were the root of it and that people just didn't realize what Tuchel had actually achieved with that group of players and that he'd gone as far as he could in that context. So... yes, I would say it's a bit of a risk for Pochettino, but it's not a huge risk after all. He will win titles with PSG. If he didn't, there would be real questions asked about, his leadership and management, but he will. And everybody knows the way that PSG is functioning. If he fails in getting the kind of harmony and the kind of and putting together the kind of football that people want to see, it will be put down, like it has been for his predecessors, with the exception perhaps of Unai Emery, to the fact that it is a basket case of a club, where the problems do not lie with the technicians and the coaches, and maybe not even with the players as such, but with the whole pyramid and the way that the club is run from the top. So in this case, it's a very well-paid job. It's in the city which he likes, in a club of which he's obviously a very important figure as a player. I would say no strings attached in many ways, so you can totally understand why he decided to say yes to El Khelaifi when the proposal came.
Yes, I suppose I'm talking of the negative aspects of the job, which are very real, and Pochettino has to go in with his eyes wide open. But you think of the positives. We did, as you say, see a kind of collective focus blossom last year in the latter stages of the Champions League, and they reached a final.
Very much so, yeah.
By all accounts, there was a dinner at Verratti's restaurant, no less, where they said, come on, let's get it together and give this a bit of a push. And when they did, they obviously got to a final. So if Pochettino arrives there and can tap into that, wherever that is buried, these are still high-level professionals who do want to win things, I'm sure. Maybe there is, some way he can tap into that drive and say, well, look, one year of hard-working collective here, and I brought Spurs to a Champions League final. I can certainly bring you guys back to one, and maybe one step beyond. He does have talent at his disposal. Like that is the carrot here. That is the big carrot here. Neymar, Mbappe, I think they've only, is it a year left in their contract, Philippe?
Year and a half. Okay. Contract expiring 30th June 2022 in both cases. Situation is a little bit unclear at the moment because obviously the fact that Pochettino has been appointed does change quite a lot of things. But just to rebound on what you were just saying, it is absolutely true that there is absolutely wonderful material to work with, and it's not because we are poking fun or even pointing the finger at Neymar for his extracurricular activities. We have to remember that when he was fit and he was playing, he was absolutely superb with Tuchel, absolutely magnificent, really. And it gets lost a little bit in all the controversies and the image and the reputation he now carries. but he was absolutely super when he was called on and he was fit, which is, of course, a big problem. Kylian Mbappe is a bit of an enigma because he's gone backwards. He's not as transient, he's not as at ease with himself, I would say, than he was a year or 2 years ago. So maybe if Pochettino can find the key back to the Mbappe that we knew, and we know he can be one of the world's top players, there's no doubt about that, then you think, oh my goodness, yes, it is really well worth having a go. And you know, and you look at the other players around him, I mean, it's not exactly a bad squad. It's a strange squad. It's unbalanced because you've got some players whom you can genuinely call international or even world class, playing alongside players who probably would belong in a mid-table team in Ligue 1. I exaggerate, but not much. So if he can do that, and the other thing as well, is that Pochettino is somebody who knows how to use the youth system. And PSG's youth system, whatever the faults of the club, is actually pretty damn good. And he's actually, in his squad for tonight's game, he's brought in a couple of 17-year-olds, partly because of injuries and sickness and so forth, but also because he wants to have a look at them. So you're thinking, okay, well, maybe he can do something. And if there is one person who can do something, when you think of the state that Tottenham was in when he arrived, what he did with Tottenham, you think, why wouldn't he be able to do something similar with PSG?
It's very interesting about Mbappe. I hadn't quite realized his form had dipped that way. So what kind of a player seeing on the pitch in comparison with the superstar of the last World Cup, for instance?
I think that I see a player who is not as smart in his choices, which is, for Mbappe, crazy to say, because he's one of the smartest players around. He's one of the most intelligent young men you can come across, both as a person and as a player. He's still as quick as he ever was, but there's an element of indiscipline. I mean, have a look, for example, the red cards he got and how he got them. And you will think, well, this doesn't fit in with the Mbappe we know and love. His efficacy and efficiency, I should say, hasn't been the same. The numbers have dropped. I've dropped in far too many categories, even if he's had true some health problems, some injuries. But also the injuries might have been caused, not necessarily impact injuries as well. So you feel that there is a player here who is still exceptionally good, but he's not quite at the extraordinarily high level we saw him towards the end of his Monaco career with the French national team at the beginning of his PSG career. He's not quite there at the moment. And the past season certainly was not one of his best. So if you can get that Mbappe back, I mean, come on, you've got Angel Di Maria, you've got... you haven't got Edinson Cavani anymore, which is a bit of a problem. You haven't got Thiago Silva anymore, which is another bit of a problem, but you've still got an awful lot of players who are basically game changers. He's got to find a way to make these players like Neymar and Mbappe remember that they play in a team. That's what I wanted to say for Mbappe. Mbappe last season didn't really play as if he were in a team. He probably felt too often that it was up to him to make the difference, for him to do sometimes a bit of a show, but not always, but just to try a little bit too much. And Pochettino is exactly the right person, I think, to take this kind of player on board and to tell him to actually go back to what he does best.
How's Pochettino's French, by the way?
It was quite good. It's better than in English. His English when he arrived in England, that's for sure. And you know, Mauricio, you know, within 6 months, he will be speaking absolutely fluently. But no. He spent enough time in Paris to have a pretty decent French.
Okay. Well, look, this is going to be fascinating. I mean, his next job was always going to be big, and it's big. And if he manages to land PSG at Champions League, then, geez, his stock is incredibly high. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer breathed a sigh of relief. There's probably quite a few managers who are gone, well, thank God that piranha is out of the water.
Yes, indeed.
Philippe Auclair, thanks so much, as ever.
Thank you very much.
There you are, the great Philippe Auclair speaking to us earlier on. So it's about to go full-time at Old Trafford. They're into the 91st minute, 3 minutes at a time. Manchester United 0, Manchester City 2. Fernandinho, Fernandinho will not score a goal like this very often in his career, I think it's safe to say. It was a corner. Wan-Bissaka, it was a poor header, just headed a high looping header just straight out to the edge of the D. And Fernandinho, in fairness to him, smacked a volley into the bottom corner to make it 2-0. John Stones had scored from a set piece early in the second half, and so it's Manchester City who play Spurs in the Carabao Cup final. Kevin Doyle's been watching this game, amongst other things. We're going to chat to him next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Welcome back, Manchester City players high-fiving on the pitch. It's gone full-time at Old Trafford. John Stones scored the opener from a corner, and then Fernandinho scored a volley he's not likely to score too often, as I was saying before the ad break, to make it 2-0. Kevin Doyle, former Republic of Ireland international, watched that game. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm good, John, yourself?
Yeah, very well. Were you flicking over to CNN or did you stick with the game?
Stuck with the game.
Less carnage at Old Trafford.
I missed the second goal. I was going up here to set up this link, so saw the first goal. I think it went pretty much the way the flow of the game it deserved. I think Man City probably deserved to win the game. They looked more threatening going forward. Man United, again, to me, looked fairly suspect at the back, which to me might worry for them if they're to put in some sort of title challenge.
In what way are they suspect at the back, Manchester United? Is it a certain individual in there who's making some bad decisions and causing havoc, or is it a collective issue?
Collective. To me, it looks like, I've said it a couple of times, like they spent a lot of money, their whole back four, if you go through them. You know, they're probably as expensive, if not more expensive, than anyone in the league. You know, Luke Shaw was, I think, around 40 million. Wan-Bissaka was in and around the same. Harry Maguire was a record amount spent for a centre-half. To me, they look like they need a defensive coach. They look like they need specific work. They don't look like a group. They always look like they're doing their own thing. Spaces between them and the decisions they make. They're good at, like, Wan-Bissaka is excellent going forward, but going back the way even the other night when he switched off for a quick free kick, different things. Luke Shaw, to me, overcovers all the time, always gets caught out of position. It just looks like they need coaching, drills, videos. It looks like they don't do it. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, who knows. But to me, it looks like they never do it in training. It looks like they're the sort of team who go out and play a five-a-side in training and it's fantastic and there's loads of goals scored. But when it doesn't look like they work on any sort of defensive shape or organisation, because they are good players.
Yeah.
Harry Maguire gets a lot of stick, but he was signed as a top player and everyone was pretty happy with that signing. Manchester United fan-wise, it's like, yeah, this is the centre-half we need. But again, any of those back four haven't done what they were expected of them when they were brought in.
But Maguire did reasonably well tonight, intercepted quite a few balls, yeah. Found himself in good positions. Are you a Bailly or a Lindelof man? I suspect neither, ultimately, but if you had to pick.
Bailly looked good the last few games, in fairness. I think he just brings a bit more pace at the back.
Yeah.
I think Maguire gets more sick than he probably deserves. I'd be more worried about the two fullback options. Mm. I'm always pulling my hair out watching Luke Shaw in particular.
He doesn't. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's just not fit, and like he can delude himself. He just isn't. When you say he's over covering, what does that mean?
If you watch, I don't know if you saw the goal, the Aston Villa goal. Last week. Mm. He didn't get any. No one mentioned it. It wasn't mentioned in commentary. And I was tearing my hair out looking at it. He did a job that he didn't need to do. He left his man. I can't remember the Aston Villa goal scorer. But he was marking him. He tracked him back, did everything right. And at the last second, he had a bit of a brain fart. And he went to try to do Harry Maguire's job. He kept straight in across. And not only did he not do the job and cut the ball out, which he tried to do, he turned his arse to it. But if he'd just stood in his position, maintained his shape, the ball would have dropped to him in his, you know, he was covered enough. He tucked in nicely. He was in a good position. Mm. That's the last second. And you see that at the back stick. I don't know the amount of times, maybe I'm just picking on him, but the amount of times I see him at the back stick getting caught out of position, looking over his shoulder, not being aware of the person he's marking. Do his job, first of all. Don't be worrying about Harry Maguire or whoever else is in there. Yeah. Do his job. And in that game in particular, it really stood out to me. And Wan-Bissaka got a bit of stick. He switched off for a quick free kick against Aston Villa. They broke down the line. But not a word was said about Luke Shaw. Mm. I just think he just hasn't, you know, to be fitness. I don't know how Man United have the best sports scientists in the world. Obviously, he must be passing all the tests because how is he playing? But just looking at him, any person watching from the sidelines, you'd say he needs to lose a bit of weight. He needs to be fitter, stronger. He seems to come off with cramp or tight muscles a lot of the time, get little injuries like that, which is a sign of someone who isn't in the proper shape.
Because there was a period where he came back one pre-season and talked about how he had really got on top of his diet, you know. And that meant there was had been an issue. You know, it was like an acknowledgement that, you know, maybe I hadn't been as professional as I needed to be. But visibly, he doesn't. It just looks like he could lose a stone and he wouldn't miss it. You know, I mean, being brutal about it, which is a lot of weight to men. You know, for a professional footballer to carry anything even close to that looks like a lot. Unless he's, I mean, maybe he might argue he's a Wayne Rooney body type, and it's just appearances. I don't know.
Yeah, listen, maybe he's just sort of unique body type. I know people do struggle, but you'd accept a few years ago he was young and he mightn't have known, you know, his diet might have been off. He's living like an 18 or 19 year old does. And you'd imagine he came back. I remember when he was being asked probably two seasons ago now. It was under Jose Mourinho anyway, and he was getting a bit of stick from Jose Mourinho, and rightly so. Yeah. It didn't seem to change to me looking at him. You use your eyes and you look at someone, and he never looks fully fit. I know Damien Duff, remember asking Damien Duff about him, we were doing a Man United game together, and he was saying he played against him and he was phenomenal. This is at Southampton. Yeah. He was, you know, in the stats afterwards you watch, because Damien thought he'd never seen anyone run as much of them, and he said he ran double what anyone else did, high intensity, and that was why Man United spent so much money on him. But he hasn't done that at Manchester United, and maybe he's just very unfortunate. No matter what he does, he can't, you know, visually keep the weight off. You have to look at his body, you look at his face, you know. Most professional footballers, 99 of them, are fairly chiseled, fairly gaunt looking, nearly ill looking. Yeah. He's certainly not looking like that.
No, you can see it in a footballer's face straight away these days. You know, they're 5%. You can see 5% body fat, cheekbones a mile away. You know, and he doesn't quite have them. Do you know, he does another thing actually. And sorry, this has turned into a Luke Shaw session. It's not meant to be that. We'll get off Luke Shaw in a second, because problems are wider than him. Do you remember post COVID on Project Restart, there was a Spurs Man United game. It was when Roy Keane went off in the studio about how, you know, De Gea, he'd have him up against the wall or whatever. But there was a goal conceded in that game where Luke Shaw's at left back and he heads the ball forward, or he passes the ball forward, one or the other, I can't quite remember now. I think it's a header. And before he's certain that the United player he's headed the ball to has possession, you know, control, because the game, you know, he was still under pressure, the guy who's giving the ball to, he'd sort of sprinted on beyond him as if to, you know, go in an overlap type thing, and Spurs broke into the space where he was and they scored a goal. He's done this a few times, like ever since. It just stuck in my mind at the time as an odd thing for a left back at that level to do. He'll do silly things like that a good bit as well. And you're kind of thinking, like, there's loads there in the kind of pro column, and then there's these odd things in the negative column. Like, they bought Alex Telles for a reason. You know, they're deep down, they know it's not quite working.
And I think, Telles does. Solskjaer goes back to Shaw. He plays Telles for a few games, and I always, you know, he's not perfect either, but I always feel more confident when he's playing. I think he does a better job, but he seems to have a, you know, a favouritism for Shaw, or likes him. We don't see what he's doing in training or what's going on there, but... again, just going back to, and it's not just so we're picking on them, and they're tied for top of the table at the moment, and a bit harsh, but to me they don't look, it's the one we all over, they're so good going forward, they look like they can score, not at will, but you know, they look exciting to watch again, watch Manchester United play. But at the back, I really just feel, I'd love to, he's bringing in players, their ex-players and ex-coaches back in, Solskjaer's talk with different people coming in, I'd love to hear him bringing in just a defensive coach to take that back 4-8 day after day, and they'd hate it and they'd be giving out and moaning, but they need it. You can tell, anyone watching them can tell that they're not a unit, and a little few tweaks and a little bit of work on it, and you know, they wouldn't just be contenders, they'd be a massive force, because individually they were signed for Man United, spent a lot of money to, you know, all really top class players, they're just together now, they just don't look the sum of their parts.
They didn't make the breakthrough this evening. Did City defend especially well, or United not quite at their best?
City were good tonight. They were really sharp. They looked really good going forward. United weren't bad either. It was a close enough game. It was actually enjoyable game to watch for a League Cup game. And they put out strong enough teams, a couple of changes, goalies and things. But I just think
like they had 11 attempts, United to City's 12. So it was that, you know, it was relatively even.
It was relatively even. I would say the City's 12 were a couple of them were a bit more clear cut. You know, it was three offside goals in the first 20 minutes. It was actually a really good game. It was Man City had two off goals. Man United scored the first goal, ruled out offside. Man City scored two more, ruled out for offside. So, good game to watch. League Cup wise, probably as good as I've seen in a long time. Good to see them play their strongest teams. I think it was just a fair result. So I don't think Man United played particularly bad. I thought they played fine, but Man City just played better on the day.
Yeah, I know sometimes United can play a diamond, but if they were playing three in midfield, and presumably Bruno Fernandes is one of those three, who are the other two for you?
I think you have to play Fred and McTominay probably. And you know, after that, that's how long ago was it? A month ago when Fred got sent off in that Champions League game, and how can he play again? But he is, you know, he adds a bit of solidity there. McTominay's impressed me. He didn't play pretty well in the last game, but he's impressed me over the course of a few months. He's really grown in stature and into the position. I wouldn't play Pogba as one of them. I think he tries too hard to get involved and be the main man and be everywhere. And by being centre midfielder, I take him out of that position and play him, I don't know, wide. I play him like he plays for France, or play him out of a central role, because I just think he dominates and demands the ball in places he shouldn't get it as a central midfielder at times. And I think that the defenders, when they have the ball, they look up and they see Pogba, even though he may be marked by two or three people that seem demanding it. They give it to him, and I would take his influence out of that central role and put him a bit more in the periphery. But yeah, Fred McTominay, they need it. The back four need them, and they need those two players sitting in front of them, and plenty of good attacking players ahead of them then to break teams down.
So City are an interesting case just now. We were talking pre-match with Miguel Delaney and even just amongst ourselves, and we were wondering if what we saw at Stamford Bridge was almost the beginning of something, you know, or would it just be a flash and wouldn't be sustained all that long. So you would have to say again tonight, without being clearly as good as they were on Sunday, but it was a little bit more of the same, wasn't it? Going forward, at least, there looked to be a bit of pep in their steps. No pun intended, but there did look to be a bit of mojo about them back.
Definitely. It's strange, isn't it? You know, you'd wonder what the training regimes are, what managers do to get teams to peak. But they're definitely in the last couple of games a real, you know, they just, even De Bruyne looks fitter, looks sharper to me, looked really good tonight. They definitely have picked it up in the last few. I've seen them a few weeks ago and they were terrible. I think it was West Brom.
Yeah.
They really didn't look at it at all. Didn't look sharp. Pep looked depressed on the touchline, looked like he'd been out the night before and hadn't slept. Even him, he's sharpened himself up looking at him tonight. He looks better on the touchline. Everyone looks a bit happier. And again, I suppose Liverpool dropping points and they've got a few games in hand and they sense a bit of, you know what, things are turning our way a little bit. And the second half of the season, this is when it gets going now. They win their games in hand, they're back right up there.
And this league feels like it's there for the taking, doesn't it? I mean, like, so Liverpool, right when they looked, you know, after that 7-0 win, and they looked like they were going to kick on and just canter away very easily from the rest, we've had this unbelievable slump. The Fulham game, West Brom, Newcastle, Southampton the other night. Like, Southampton were really good, to be fair. They were really good. But Southampton the other night, Henderson having to drop back into the centre of defence. How many different partnerships have they had there? That's a mess, the centre of their defence right now. Like, you wouldn't feel confident that Liverpool are going to suddenly go on that 7-8 game winning run at the moment. They look genuinely like there's a bit of trouble to work out of their system. I know, obviously, stranger things have happened, but you wouldn't be feeling as confident as you might have a month ago.
No. And, even Jurgen Klopp, he doesn't look as happy in interviews and different things, talking about Man United and their penalties and different things, just concentrate on your own thing. He's usually so positive in all interviews and speaks really well. So, and a run over Christmas wasn't particularly difficult. You just name those teams there. They could be, I think they're 15 points off or maybe even more than they were at this stage last season. So rather than other teams picking up and have been, you know, it's more Liverpool dropping off, Man City dropping off a little bit to where they were last year. I saw the Newcastle game. I was watching that live. And in fairness, they were very unlucky in that. They should have won that game. Newcastle goalkeeper Darrow had a wonderful night, saved everything and nothing dropped for Liverpool on the night. I think Mo Salah could have had a hat-trick, had some great chances. So in fairness, they played well that night. But in the other games, the West Brom game, you know, second half, they were very poor. Southampton, in fairness, having a good season. Listen, you could make excuses or reasons for different things, but overall, take those four or five games and over Christmas like that, they would have expected to be sitting pretty, I'd imagine. They'd have been happy with that fixture list, a busy time to have that fixture list. They'd expected to pick up a lot more points. So great for everyone else, great for us watching the league. Liverpool need to sign a centre-half. A lot of it's spoken about, you know, having to play Jordan Henderson there, not the answer. They need him in the middle of the park. And I also think they need a centre-forward, different to what they have. Their three have been fantastic over the last few years. Brilliant. As good as any team in the world or front three, but they're all sort of same-ish. Firmino plays through the middle, but in games like the Newcastle game or the West Brom game, when they have everyone behind the ball and Liverpool just need, you know, a big ignorant goal poacher just sits in, you know, maybe to bring off the bench for half an hour, someone to be different to what they have.
It's funny, who might score a tap in and just sit there,
you know.
And it's funny on that, and I guess they're unlucky to have lost Jota as well. But again, he's in that vein of those three.
Yeah.
When they were going really well, those three, pack defence, park the bus all you like, they could just quick touch, round the corner, create an angle, boom, boom, boom. Before you know it, you know, they've cut you open. And God, it was electric to watch. And it looked like, oh, they don't need that big Kevin Doyle-esque lump in there to win a few headers. But that seems to, that spark isn't quite there. Like, a ball's gone into Firmino now. It feels less likely that he's going to bounce off one of the others and create something for whatever reason.
Yeah, I know. They just said, yeah, teams go through. You can't expect them all. They were so good for so long. I suppose they all just happened to be in a little bit more. Salah, in fairness, he got chances in that Newcastle game anyway. He should have scored a few. Jota getting injured, a bit unlucky there. But, you know, even not even a big lump, just a little goal poacher. You know, someone, a Robbie Keane, Jermaine Defoe, anyone like that, that just stay, has no interest in going out. Because all that front three love rotating, all getting involved, they could end up wide, they could end up through the bill, could end up anywhere. But just that centre forward who might come on for half an hour. You know, Diego Costa, someone like that.
Cavani was a great signing.
Yeah, Cavani would have been. Yeah, he's a fabulous player and still good enough and seems to be happy that he doesn't play. So someone like that as well, who's, you know, because he's not going to play it. He's going to keep that front three most of the time. But just someone in games when it's sticky and you need someone, you know what, just be ignorant enough, who's just happy to be in around the 6 yard box and score goals. You know, Aguero for Man City, obviously can't get these type of players. It's very difficult. But someone like Aguero who doesn't move, doesn't go down the wing, doesn't look to get it out wide in most cases, always just wants to score goals. And Liverpool don't really, hasn't harmed them, I suppose. And that's what will be their argument, hasn't harmed them. But at the moment, you just, to bring someone on for half an hour, make a change, you know, a different style. They don't have anyone to make that change at the moment. And when they could do it a goal or two in the last few games, I think it would have made the difference.
Listen, brilliant stuff as always. The clock is against us. I'll let you go. And when you see the Wan-Bissaka header that leads to the Fernandinho goal on the edge of the area, you'll be giving out about him as well. So, Kevin Doyle, thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe. Thanks.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.